You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Episode number 50 of That One Time on Tour is brought to you by Talking with Andrew and Chris.
Hey guys, I'm Andrew.
And I'm Chris.
And we're the hosts of Talking with Andrew and Chris, a show about life, music, and everything in between.
Each week, we sit down with songwriters, producers, radio hosts, and other creatives from all across the entertainment industry to talk about their process.
We've already had guests such as Dom Reed of Broadside, Tyler Wilson of 7715, Mike Fishkin of Adobe Radio, as well as others, and we've got a lot more on the way.
We really hope you guys join us every Monday, and if you're a fan of this kind of show, then we feel you'll be right at home.
We're available everywhere podcasts are available, and we hope to hear from you soon.
Stay sweet!
There's a place off Ocean Avenue where I used to sit and talk with you. We were both 16 and it felt so right. Sleeping all day, staying up all night.
Hello, this is Benjamin Harper, former founding member of the band Yellow Card, and you're listening to That One Time on Tour.
Run for the road, cause it's going on and on. We'll be driving through the darkest night until the break of dawn. We'll be heading for the cities, another show for us to play. To get back in the bank tomorrow, we'll do it. We'll do it all again.
Hey, boys and girls, what's going on? This is Chris Swinney. As always, I am your host for That One Time on Tour. This is my podcast where I speak with people in or around the entertainment industry, mostly in the music industry. So if you're joining me for the first time, thank you so much. However you got here, I'm glad you're here. For everybody else, thank you for coming back week in and week out. I appreciate you guys checking out last week's episode with Jake and Logan from the band Law. Hope you guys enjoyed that. It was a great episode, and it was actually supposed to be this week. If you listened to last week, you heard that my hard drive ate my episode with Kevin Martin from Candlebox, and I was very bummed out. I felt like I wasted his time. It felt horrible. It was horrible. But I have spoken with Kevin. He understood that technology sucks sometimes, and he's going to be back on the podcast. We're recording at the end of the month, and you guys will get to hear all the sweet Candlebox stories, and I can't wait for that. Kevin is a great guy, and Kevin, if you're listening, thank you so much for putting up with my fuck up, and can't wait to have you on the show again. So guys, right here at the top, I'm going to go ahead and get the housekeeping out of the way. We've got a couple sponsors to talk about. You heard the little commercial at the beginning of the podcast. That was for this really cool podcast that's called Talking with Andrew and Chris. I want you guys to check them out. They've got some good guests on there, and the sound quality, the production of the podcast is stellar. So check them out and go support Andrew and Chris. And thank you guys so much for sponsoring this episode. I really appreciate it. I'm going to be on their show in the future, and it's going to be a lot of fun. I also need to tell you about Artist Flags. I love this company so much. They make scrims and backdrops for bands. Like I said in the past, they've done stuff with Under Oath. They've done stuff with so many different bands. They sent me some really cool stuff for the podcast with the logo on it. So if you are in a band or you have a company or whatever, you just want something in your house, I bet you they could even do like a picture of your dog or something. So just hit them up at artistflags.com. It's Artist Flags on all of the social media platforms. So hit them up and tell them that Chris from That One Time on Tour sent you. Speaking of sponsors, if you guys want to become a sponsor, you have a band or a company, and you think that this would be the place to advertise to your potential customers, go ahead and hit me up at TOTOTpodcast@gmail.com. I work with all budgets, and I just want to, you know, I've got a small platform, and I'd like to let you put your stuff on the platform. As long as I like your band and I like your product, it has to be that. I'm not just here to make money. Believe me, if I was here to make money, it wouldn't be as a podcaster. So that is out of the way. I'll just go ahead and throw in there. If you guys are on the social media platforms, hit us up, follow us, TOTOT Podcast. I hang out on Instagram more than anywhere else, so make sure that you're following us. Subscribe, rate, review, all that stuff. It really helps the show, and I might read one of your reviews on the podcast, so check it out. So now we're going to head into my favorite new segment that we do. We've been doing it on almost every episode here lately. It is the top five list. This is where I have you guys send in top five lists, and you tell me your top five of the category, and then I, off the top of my head, I give you my top five. So I have Andy from Wisconsin. He sent in the top five list, top five Fat Records albums. This was a tough one for me. It's on the top of my head, but I wrote them down. I didn't use any research or anything. So I'm going to start with Andy's first, from five going up to one. Andy's fifth album is NOFX, First Ditch Effort. I got to say, I love that record. I'm a little surprised that some of the other NOFX records didn't make it into your list, but that's a solid, solid release. So good job with that one. Number four, Anti-Flag, The Terror State. We had Chris number two on the show, and he's a great guy. When I was in the Ataris, we did some gigs with Anti-Flag. I love The Terror State. If I'm not mistaken, and somebody email me if I'm wrong on this, but I think The Terror State was recorded right here in Indiana at Sonic Iguana with Mass over there in Lafayette. So yeah, that's a great record as well. Coming in at number three, Andy has Lagwagon with Hoss. I got to agree. I've got some Lagwagon on my list as well. Lagwagon is an amazing band. They're one of my favorites. They always have been. So a nice solid choice with Hoss. Number two, Less Than Jake, Borders and Boundaries. I love Less Than Jake. Back in the day, if you can believe it or not, I had a ska phase, and they were one of the bands that kind of did it for me. I was into Less Than Jake and Mustard Plug and Against All Authority. I mean, God, those guys are awesome. If you guys haven't heard Against All Authority, check them out. They had some releases on Hopeless Records back in the day, but a solid choice at number two. We're coming up to number one, and I didn't pick this one because you did. One of my favorite bands of all time. No Use for a Name with Leche Con Carne, which, man, Tony Sly is just the best songwriter in the world. So, Andy, I agree with you. No Use for a Name is way up there in my book as well. So, excellent top five, Andy. I'm going to go through them real quick again. NOFX, First Ditch Effort at number five. Anti-Flag, The Terror State at number four. Lagwagon with Hoss at number three, and Less Than Jake, Borders and Boundaries at number two, and No Use for a Name with Leche Con Carne at number one. So here we go. These are the ones that I just scribbled down from memory. There's so many great Fat Records albums that I own to this day. I've got them even on cassette. I think I've got more Fat Records stuff than anything else. But just off the top of my head, I wrote these down about 5 minutes ago. But this is Chris's list, me, Chris Swinney. Number five, I've got NOFX with The Decline. I didn't know if I was supposed to do like a full-length album. I know that's kind of, it's one song, but it's like 17 minutes long, so I think it's kind of like an EP. But The Decline is just, it's a masterpiece, man. And it's the best thing ever. I still listen to it all the time. I love The Decline. So number five is NOFX with The Decline. Coming in at number four, I picked a Lagwagon too, and I picked Trashed. That's one of their earlier records, and I just remember hearing that and hearing the harmonies and just all the crazy stuff, and man, it's such a great record. They have so many good records. I don't think they've ever put out a bad record, but my favorite, just from nostalgia and when I got into punk rock, was probably Trashed by Lagwagon. Number three, I have Strung Out with Twisted by Design. Twisted by Design is an amazing album. I remember when I was talking to Sean Colon, the director and the writer of the Fat Wreck documentary about Strung Out. And we kind of had the same experience. I remember when I was into punk rock and then I heard Strung Out do like a pinch harmonic and I was like, whoa, you can put metal into punk. And it really opened my eyes. So Strung Out, Twisted by Design at number three. Number two, one of my favorite records of all time, Propagandi. I've heard people say that as well. Potemkin City Limits. I believe it was their last record on Fat before they jumped to a different label, but it is so good. There's so much crazy guitar work and just the melodies. Everything is perfect. Propaganda gets a little political sometimes. I kind of enjoy that. I think, you know, I like my politics with my punk rock, but some people don't. But man, it's just, they're stellar. They're also one of the best live bands I've ever seen in my entire life. I am trying very, very hard right now to get Chris Hanna, the singer and lead guitar guy, to come on the podcast. I've met him a few times in the past. I've got a really cool story. about, I think I might have said this on the podcast before. I was on tour in Canada and I never really saw pictures of the band, and I love them so much, and I'd never seen them live at that point. And I was sitting at this bar in Winnipeg after we played and talking to this guy. And after about 2 hours of talking, I realized that it was Chris Hanna from Propagandhi, and I felt like a douchebag. But I want to talk to him about that. So hopefully he'll come on the show. So yeah, number two, Propagandhi with Potemkin City Limits. Number one, I went with a No Use for a Name album as well. I went with More Betterness because when I heard that record, they slowed down a bit. It was almost kind of like, you know, when you heard Load or Reload from Metallica, like it was a total 180 on as far as everything sounded. It wasn't quite that just fast punk beat all the time. It was, I felt like it was more melodic, if you can actually get more melodic than their previous stuff. And there were just different drum beats, and the dynamics were just so different. And that record sticks with me. I still listen to it all the time. Not that I, you know, don't listen to Leche Con Carne and Making Friends, but No Use for a Name, More Betterness is my number one at this moment right now. So yeah, there's my list. Number five, No Effects, The Decline. Number four, Lagwagon with Trashed. Number three, Strung Out, Twisted by Design. Number two, Propagandhi, Potemkin City Limits. And number one, No Use for a Name with More Betterness. So yeah, I hope you guys liked the top five list segment this week. If you want to send me a top five list, hit me up at the email, TOTOTpodcast@gmail.com, or anywhere on the social media platforms, TOTOTpodcast. If you want to help the show out and you want to have priority for things like top five lists, go on over to our Patreon. It's patreon.com/TOTOTpodcast. For like less than two cups of good coffee a month, you can help us, and it helps us basically in our quality and our content. And it's kind of tough doing this. It takes a lot of time. People don't realize that you don't just talk on a mic and you're done. There's a lot of scheduling and, you know, equipment and all kinds of stuff. So I enjoy doing it. I'll always do it. I'll do it for free. I'm not trying to make any money. But if you want to help the show out, I'd really appreciate the support. So head on over to Patreon and check it out. Coming up on episode number 52, it's going to be our special year episode. We've been doing it for over a year now, but I skipped a couple weeks. So episode 52 is going to be kind of the big celebration, the big milestone of 52 episodes, one for every week in a year. And it's going to be an Ask Chris episode. I'm compiling a list of questions currently, and my wife has been helping me. She's my producer. She's going to be on that show, hopefully. She keeps saying she is, and then I say, are you sure? And she's like, I don't know. She's kind of scared to get on the mic, but I'm going to get her on the mic. She's going to ask me some questions from you guys. So go ahead and send in your questions to the email, any of the social medias, whatever. And just remember, if you become a patron, you get priority. So I will read your questions first. Okay, so that about does it. I'm going to get out of here. I haven't even told you who the guest is today. So if you're still listening, I appreciate it. I got to sit down with Benjamin Harper of the band Yellow Card, this legend, and he also runs and oversees and owns Takeover Records. We had a really good time chatting. There's a little bit of weird kind of interference on my track for some reason. I'm not really sure. I'm still new to this podcasting game, and sometimes it goes great, and sometimes there's some weird stuff with my phone and the computer and everything, but his sounds great. My track sounds a little weird. I cleaned it up as best I could, so please do not judge me on the quality of this podcast, but the content is wonderful. So I hope you guys enjoy this. This is my conversation with Mr. Benjamin Harper of the band Yellow Card, this legend, and Takeover Records. Here we go. And I'm on the line with Ben Harper. How you doing today, buddy?
Oh, it's a beautiful day here in Big Bear Lake, California. How are you?
I'm good. It's not probably as beautiful here in Muncie, Indiana, but it's starting to get warmer. No snow on the ground, so I'm happy.
Yeah, you know, we're actually 7,000 feet, so we are, you know, we're the Southern California mountains where the ski resorts are, so we get snow, and we've had a lot of snow this year, so I can kind of relate to you, sir.
Well, I know that you grew up in Florida, correct?
Yes, wonderfully humid Florida.
I like to start these things out. I mean, I know there's some small talk and whatnot, but I would really like to dig right in. I want to know what got you into music. We're going to talk about all your bands and all the stuff that you've done, but what spoke to you? You're around my age. I think we're like 2 years apart. So when you were young, like what got you into guitar and what got you into music and made you passionate about it?
I'll be perfectly honest. I mean, my father was in, you know, in the Pink Floyd and AC/DC, and I grew up, of course. My parents were born and raised in Los Angeles. Even though I was, grew up in Florida, they listened to a lot of music, but I got to say that what brought me to playing guitar was the whole grunge movement. Like, I was a little kid watching the MTV Video Music Awards, and I would see, I think it was Pearl Jam was playing live, and it was just so fascinating about their performance, and they were jumping around, and it was just like cool music that I wasn't used to. And I think I asked for a guitar for my 12th Christmas or whatnot when I was 12 years old. And I got a guitar and started learning Nirvana songs and Pearl Jam songs. And that kind of did it. So that was the start.
Did you get an acoustic or an electric for that first guitar?
It was a Fender Squire. It was like a red and white Fender Squire. And it was electric. And I had a little practice amp. And I took my first lesson from my stepmom's sister, and I think my first song was Tom Petty, Free Falling, because it's just a D chord variation.
Yeah, it's got like the sus 4 and the sus 2 in it, right?
Yeah, you know your stuff.
Yeah, I teach guitar for a living, so we might nerd out if you know a little bit about theory.
I do. I'll tell you what, and I can tell you later like what I do now and stuff for a living. And but I did teach. I got a teaching AP theory in high school, and I ended up going to arts high school. And then I taught. Also, I taught, you know, guitar lessons out of high school to make money before Yellowcard moved away. And it wasn't like advanced theory teaching, but it was more like teaching young kids how to play songs they heard on the radio.
That's cool.
I'm sure you can relate to that.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I've got like 60 kids a week, and some of them are like pretty advanced. So we're doing like college level theory, but a lot of the kids, I'm just teaching them the chords and the scales and stuff like that, you know?
That is super cool. I can't imagine the level of kids these days compared to what it was like in 94, 95 going to high school or even teaching the kids around that era. But I can, that's cool. So you make a living off of doing that mostly?
Yeah. When I, pretty much, I left the Ataris and, I got this job down in Gulf Shores, Alabama, working in artist relations for the Hangout Music Festival. And I was there for about 6 or 7 years. And then I ended up having my first son, and my wife and I moved back to Indiana, and I'd taught in the past and I just started it again. And as long as you keep a lot of students, it's a really good job. It's just, you have to do your own taxes and everything, you know?
Oh yeah, and then you're constantly busy, and that's a lot, and you have to be on your game dealing with people and teaching people every day, so I commend that for sure.
Yeah, dealing with the parents is kind of sketchy sometimes, but I do my best.
Yeah, I remember, at least for me, I'd drive to these parents' houses in these gated communities in the area. We lived in Ponte Vedra Beach, Florida, and I would take checks, you know, back in the days when they would write checks, and it was all, you would always get all these, you'd have a stack of checks from all these kids' parents. So I'll never forget those days.
So you were talking about going to the arts high school, you know, you were there in Florida. I guess we can forward a little bit. Were you in a lot of bands before you formed Yellowcard, or was that like your first band?
Yep. No, that was actually the first band in 1997. I played with LP Longinus Parsons, the drummer, him and I, which we should have invited him for this wonderful conversation.
maybe I'll have him on again. I think he's a great drummer, man.
Yeah, he and I are still, you know, best friends to this day. He actually just recently moved from Florida back to California. Him and I met in high school, and I think it was like 94, 95, and we just jammed in my mom's bedroom and stuff like that. And we ended up going to this arts, or we ended up, yeah, going to arts, basically 97. The band formed in 97 through Arts High School. I'm sorry, what was the, I almost forgot the original question.
Well, no, the original question, I just wanted to know if like you were in bands before that, and I saw the Yellow.
Oh, no bands, no. No bands before. It was my first high school band. I was 17 years old. Maybe we got together and like covered some songs when I was in middle school or something like that. Nothing serious. I think, I don't know, who knows how young kids are starting bands these days, but yeah, no, it was 10th grade, and then LP and I jammed a couple years before that. Sorry for getting off track here. My dog was kind of
doing
something unknown inside the window. But yeah, no, I got lucky. I got lucky. The band, I started the band in high school, and that was the band that, you know, I had a career with. So,
where did the name come from?
Oh no. I remember it was like a backyard high school show, and we were a band for a few weeks, and we needed a name. And we sort of just threw names around the room, and Yellow Card we had an interest in because it meant it was a warning. And we just went with it, and we stuck with it, and we ended up using it as like when we would hang out when we were kids and someone would spill a beer or break a bong or something like that, we would say, you know, Yellow Card, you got one more, you're out of here, sort of thing. And it became a joke, and it stuck.
That's awesome, man.
Who would have thought?
Yeah, who would have thought? Well, and that takes me to your first record, Midget Tossing. Can you give me a little bit of background where that name came from for the album?
That was crazy. It was literally, we would rehearse every single day after high school. We would come to the current singer. We had a different singer than Yellow Card's known for at the time. And we would go to Ben, his name was Ben as well, we'd go to Ben's house and we would rehearse. And I'm not going to lie, we smoked a lot of pot and just would put our hours in, and that's what we would do. And it was, I don't know where it came from, but if you look it up, midget tossing is an actual sport, and we were just fascinated. I think it was our singer was fascinated with actual midget tossing, and our bass players, our bass player's cousin was an artist, and he just came up with that beautiful drawing, and we went with it to this day. And to be perfectly honest, because you brought up midget tossing, believe it or not, Takeover Records was the record label that came out with it was our record label. We came out with the first few Yellow Card releases, even the demo that got us signed. And we are going to be releasing Midget Tossing to Spotify and
awesome, man.
iTunes Music, and that'll actually be out sometime this year. So if people want to go way back, they can for Yellow Card.
That's awesome, man. Well, you just brought up Takeover Records, and you also, I mean, we're going to talk about that in a little bit. But speaking of getting signed, I know you guys signed to Lobster Records. Was that, let me see, probably around 2000, something around there?
Mm-hmm. You know your stuff, sir.
I did some research. I'm hoping it's correct. Wikipedia is wrong sometimes, you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. We signed to Lobster Records. I remember we got Ryan Key, the Ocean Avenue era singer. He was a musical theater fan. We all went to that art high school where we formed, and he ended up joining the band after our current singer got into the electronic music scene, and he just sort of wasn't into being a singer as much as our friend Ryan, who had just gotten back from California with his band Craig's Brother and had all these songs. And we did this small demo, and I remember Warren and I flew out to California, the bass player and I flew out to California. We met with two labels, and it was Drive Through Records and Lobster Records. And Lobster Records was more family to us, whereas Drive Through was the established label, kind of, you know, the major label in a sense, but it was all indie, you know, they were just like the big guys. And we did the whole Stepmont stand on Richard Rain's back thing, and which was, if you know about that, you know about, you know, Drive Through.
Yeah, I've got some buddies. I've got some buddies that were on Drive Through. Yeah. I've heard stories about it.
Heard the standing on the back story, I'm sure.
You could tell my listeners the story if you'd like to, though. My listeners might not know the story.
Okay, well, if you're not familiar with the Richard Rains Drive Through Records and on the back story, I don't know if anyone's supposed to be secret or anything, but during that time when Drive Through, you know, had the New Concord in Midtown and were pretty prevalent in the early pop punk world, it was standard. You'd go and you'd meet with him or go to their office, Drive Through Records office, and give them the demo and you'd show you around the office. And he would tell you that he has a bad back and to establish trust or whatever, can you please stand on my back and like kink out, help me kink out. Like you're like, physically stand on your back. And he'd be like, yes. And he would get on his stomach and he would have you literally stand on his back. And I guess it relieved pain or whatever for him.
Yeah.
And I don't know what it was, but I guess it was, you know, I don't know. to this day really what that was. But
maybe it's just some weird thing trying to freak young bands out. I don't know.
You know, who knows? I don't even know how that would be looked upon these days. But it was super weird. Maybe it was a joke. Maybe it was a long time joke. And maybe people that were actually on drive through know more than I do.
Yeah.
Maybe even throughout your podcast, you can help us figure this out.
That'll be the running thing. I'm going to try to get some guys from Finch and different guys on here. So yeah, maybe I can figure out what's the deal with standing on his back.
Talk to Kenny from Starting Line. Help, talk to the guys, please. Awesome. Talk to the Beach from Home Green. They probably know. Talk to Johnny. to get back to the story, we ended up signing with Lobster. We had some sort of, our bass player, Warren Cook, who's very much a founder and had everything to do with starting Yellow Card, his older brother, JC, used to work for Melancholy and all these cool Epitaph bands, and also did Lobster Records bands, who had Sean, the original guitar player, Blagwagon, had his band Buck Wild on Lobster Records. And, sort of small, we all grew up on Strung Out and Bad Religion and Lagwagon and all that kind of stuff. So we were very fond of that. And so we went with them and we had the opportunity to sign with Lobster off of that demo. We ended up moving to California from Jacksonville, Florida, to Camarillo, Ventura, because we were on a Santa Barbara record label, and we did a record with Darian Rundle, who was known for doing Pennywise Straight Ahead and was running Fletcher's Studio in Hermosa Beach.
Awesome.
And it was called Stall Number 2. That's a quick little story in a nutshell with Lobster for you.
Well, I knew some of the guys in Mock Orange for a while that were on Lobster because they're from Indiana. And I always thought Lobster was a great label. Like Lorraine Drive was on Lobster. They're a great band. And
hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I don't know a lot of
quality bands. Yeah, talented bands. Yes. Yeah,
very talented
bands. Yeah, it's a guy named Steve Lavarsky. Still, he's out there on Facebook World, and maybe he'll hear this one day. And he, I don't think they're still doing stuff, but yeah, like you just said it, he signed a bunch of really cool bands like Park and Mock Orange and introduced us to some, got a real cool crew with the producers he brought to his head. Cameron Webb, who's doing a lot of the current records right now.
Yeah.
Like the new Strung Out, the new Pennywise, the new No Effects. A lot of these older bands are doubling back over to Cameron. He did a lot of the early Lobster records. And I don't know. I don't know what the downfall was or here. I know Yellow Card was signed from Capitol from Lobster Records. And so I don't know what actually happened after that, obviously, because we went on to Capitol. But man, it was it was a really good experience. I mean, I remember driving from Ventura Camarillo up to Santa Barbara to pack our own Yellow Card one for the kids promo things and actually mail them out to actual people and all those days, fulfillment days.
That's awesome. So when you signed to Lobster, you guys put out, one for the kids, and you also did the Underdog EP like right after that. How was that received? Did you guys do a lot of touring right out of the gate? I mean, did you feel like you'd made it at that point?
During the Lobster Records days with One for the Kids, we were focused on doing local shows around California. We did a couple across the country runs, which were just California to Florida runs, because we had fans in Florida from living there, moving to California from there. So we would do that. We would try stopping in Texas and Arizona and all that kind of stuff along the way and do that. But we also focused on playing in Orange County and Pomona, places like the Glass House, not the Glass House, what was that place? Showcase Theater.
Chain Reaction.
Chain Reaction are some of those places we would start playing. We would open up for bands like Slick Shoes and be lucky to play at 7 o'clock, open up for them first out of four bands and get in front of a full house at Chain Reaction. Those are the things we did. And we were lucky because of Lobster Records to have CDs, printed CDs.
Yeah.
And I remember, I think it was the second time we opened up for Slick Shoes at Chain Reaction, we actually had discs on us And I think I remember selling 100 CDs to the crowd of about 300 or 400 people. And nobody knew who we were. And that's what we did. And we would come back to Chain Reaction months later and have kids singing along. And we had, those were the first days of message boards and mp3.com. And those were the days where, you know, I think us and we would play with bands like Rufio and stuff like that and built, you know, sold out like kids' civic center or kids' little civic centers in Thousand Oaks and stuff like that. And that was sort of the beginning. Those were the days where we built stuff up and built up an actual ground roots following. But it was the beginning of social media or internet, you know, of going viral. Because I remember our song October Nights was one of the first songs to hit 100,000 plays on mp3.com. Wow. If I remember correctly.
Did you just hear about MySpace today or yesterday? They lost like all of the old music that was on their servers.
Yeah, that's pretty intense. I mean, how does that happen?
Yeah, right. They were migrating servers, and I guess somebody hit a wrong button or something. Man, there's probably some yellow card stuff got lost. Some Atari stuff got lost.
Oh yeah, for sure. And it's just like music. I mean, I almost forget like what MySpace was like. What did people just load their original music directly to MySpace?
Yeah, I mean, you know how you have like a band,
I remember,
a band page for your Facebook. It's the same thing with band MySpace, but they had like an actual player on the band page, and when you went to the band page, it started playing automatically, and then you would like look and we got 100 plays today, and it would just keep counting and counting. So it was
they carried over the MP3 concept. The MP3.com started that, went over to my, you know. And that's, I guess, Facebook has been king for so long or whatnot, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I miss the days of players and counters. I think we should bring it back.
Oh, I do too. Because that's the thing with the podcast. Like, I have analytics, and I can always, you know, when I release an episode, I wake up the next morning, I'm like, wow, I got like 1,000 plays. It's the same kind of feeling, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I just miss. Yeah, I guess you're right. We have Spotify now. We have Spotify plays. And that's what our, you know, plug, you know, I still have digital distribution with Takeover Records, and we're fascinated with the streaming world and, you know, seeing what Spotify and all these streaming services are doing nowadays.
So can you tell me like how the whole thing with Capital started? I mean, you guys put out the record, the full length on Lobster, and then you also did an EP on Lobster. Capital seems like quite a big jump. How did that all that get going?
It picks up right after what I was saying, how we were playing shows around town. And we actually, you know, between the message board, mp3.com, and showing up playing these local shows, we were pulling kids. People, 300 people were coming to our Roxy show, you know, or the Key Club and this and that. And we were bringing people to Showcase Theater and Capitol Records. It was like out of the movies, you know, started noticing. And we also had a manager type person that came into our world that already had known certain A&Rs and stuff. And so people were hearing about us. They would come out and see kids singing along, and, you know, and the whole having that occur so seamlessly was because of the beginning days of the internet message board and beautiful thing. And it was the beginning of it. And so, we kind of slipped in there right at the end of big budgets and record, you know, big major labels and all that kind of stuff. But we were very much a part of a viral sort of thing. And I remember our A&R, Louis Van Dyck, I think it took like, seven concerts before we even went into a meeting with Capitol Records. And I think there was Warner Brothers was in the fold, and maybe Sony, but it just happened. I don't know, really know what to say. It just sort of happened, and it really had to do with just people were coming to our shows in droves, and we had a booking agent already. And her name was Corey Christopher, and she books, you know, like Rise Against and No Effect and all those kinds of bands these days. She's one of the biggest.
Yeah.
We came up with her, and we were ready to go, and it worked. And that's that. It was 2002. We ended up in February, we signed with Capitol Records.
So when you're on Capitol, Ocean Avenue was the debut record on Capitol, and that's the, you know, the big record that hit. It reached number 23 on the charts. What was, like, you know, the feeling when you guys were recording that? You know, how was it in the studio, the writing process? Were you guys, did you know you were onto something, or were you kind of nervous? Like, how was that?
It was definitely jumping, you know, diving into the unknown. We had no idea if our songs were those, you know, type of songs that would perform well on that stage, like Capitol Records. But there was the things like Warped Tour and all those things that Capitol Records was able to get us on, which helped helped all that. It started, I think we went up to my grandparents' mountain house in December. It was in Lake Arrowhead. And we wrote a batch of, I think, eight to 10 songs. There was a cool producer selection process where we met Neil Avron. And we were very impressed with what he did with Newfound Glory. We knew Newfound Glory. They were from South Florida and from Drive-Thru Records. And they had, from their first record to the record they did with Neil Avron, the sonic quality was just like, it was massive. You know, we never heard, like, other than maybe like Blink-182, et cetera, have we heard that kind of production on pop punk. And we ended up meeting him. I remember it was in San Francisco, chose him, brought that initial batch of songs to him. And, you know, songs like Ocean Avenue and Only One were written, you know, in pre-production and stuff like that. It was actually written, you know, as a group in the band room, knowing that we had a couple more songs before we were delayed on the album. But it was amazing. I don't know. I can't. It was some of the best times ever in my life. I'll never forget it. That kind of stuff and the magic. And I don't think we knew we were on to something. But we were already riding the wave off of just being, you know, just having kids seeing our old songs, you know, the Lobster Record songs, and having success and going to cities for the second time and visually seeing the turnout.
Yeah.
We knew we had something going on, but we didn't know it was going to transfer over into, you know, the major label world. Or the MTV world or whatnot.
Was it crazy for you, like, you know, when you started having the videos on MTV? And I think I remember you guys were at, like, the VMAs at one point. Did you win a VMA?
Yeah, we did.
That had to be a mind fuck, right?
Yeah, that was crazy. It was the MTV 2 award. And just getting nominated was one thing. But then we were asked to actually perform. So we really got the royal treatment. We were under MTV's wing for a second. And to be asked to perform, I think there was only three rock. There was Hoobastank, Jet, and Yellow Card are the three bands that performed on that particular VMA.
Wow.
So it was a very rock light show. It was right when the beginning when they started cutting out the rock. Remember, I told you I grew up watching the VMAs.
Yeah.
So for me, it was full. I got into music watching Pearl Jam on the VMAs. For me, it was full circle. So at that point in 2004, when we played the VMAs, I'm like, okay, this is it, you know, before the stage opened up. Then we ended up, after we performed, and then we went back to our seats and ended up winning an award. It was huge.
That's awesome.
Super
man.
Huge. And I remember going up to get the award. We all went there and we did our thing, and Beastie Boys were the ones who presented it. And so we collected the award from the Beastie Boys, and there was like Sasquatch or whoever it was up there with them. And then on our way back, I think it was either after the award or after the performance. I'll never forget walking back, and it was P. Diddy and Bruce Willis stood out of their chairs and were just, good job, and shook all of our hands and like hugged us. And it was just, never forget that, you know. Those are good times. Those are mind blowing times. Never forget. And I'm so lucky to, you know, Yellow Card continued after I was out of the band for many years. And of course, you know, did a few records, but I'm so lucky to have been a part of those particular Ocean Avenue huge MTV days.
So. Well, one thing that I saw, you know, I want to ask you, you know, about leaving the band, if you wouldn't mind talking about it, but I saw that you, the other guitar player that took your place was credited on Lights and Sounds, but then I also saw that you played on that record as well. Is that true?
Yeah, I absolutely played on that record and helped write that record. Not sure. I haven't seen where he was credited on that record, maybe on other things, but
I think I don't think he was credited. I think it just said like he was in the band, but then it said like, you know, other musicians or whatever. Like it said like what you did on the internet on the record, but for some reason it said like it had him as the guitar. I don't know. It was weird. The internet's weird.
Hey, you have to send me those links, whatever you have. Send them over.
I will. I'll send them over.
For sure. No, that's the big mystery thing is because I wrote the record and played on the record with the band. I was actually one of the members that went out to New York City and lived in New York City because it was, instead of all of us writing the record as a group, like we did Ocean Avenue, a couple of the guys went out to New York, and whereas the rest of the band stayed in LA. And I was able to stay with someone, a friend, be able to, you know, to be in the city with the initial writing of the record. It was very interesting. But the whole thing is I didn't tour on the record. I was out of the band when the record was finished. We had that big thing happen. And that's maybe the confusion because no one has ever seen me be on stage and play those songs.
That might be what it is. Because like I said, it's just
yep.
Googling you and Yellow Card and then trying to find all these things that are true or not true, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So you left.
That's why we're going to come out with the book in the movie. No, I'm just kidding.
So you left the band before that record came out. Can you tell me a little bit about why you left the band?
I hate saying starting questions with them. I didn't actually leave the band. I was actually asked to leave the band.
Okay.
And I think that's fair enough to say nowadays that it's no, Yellow Card's no longer, they're no longer a band.
Yeah.
They tastefully ended their careers a couple years ago, or Ryan tastefully called it quits and titled R.I.P.Y.C.
Yeah.
But, I was out of the band in, it was 2005. I was asked to leave the band. And I don't want to talk too much about it, but it was written in the press. That I was the idea, and it was sort of in agreement during the legal back and forth, was that we weren't going to come out and say, you know, oh, we had this big falling out, this and that, or whatever, you know, have a bunch of rumors come out and make it sound like it was amicable and not really rupture the fan base at the time because it was right before Lights and Sounds came.
Yeah.
And as much, yeah, no, it was pretty gnarly. Pretty gnarly. I haven't really ever talked about it before, about certain specifics, nothing on like recording or.
Well, that's why, like, I was wondering. I mean, you don't have to speak about anything you don't want to, but I really couldn't find anything. And I've always been kind of a fan of the band, and I've been a fan of the other stuff that you've done. And I just, I don't know, man. I just never knew why it happened. You know, you don't have to talk about it if you don't want to, but I'd like to know.
Well, there's different sides to every story. And I'll tell you right now, I haven't had a lot of conversation other than, you know, LP and I have been friends throughout everything, but I haven't really had a lot of conversations with the certain members involved during when that happened. We haven't really gone over it. You know, we haven't been like, now it's been so many years. It'd be like, hey, this is what happened in our 20s. It's kind of would be like, that would probably be what we would start it out with. Yeah. I don't know. I can just be kind of vague. I was super involved with my record company at the time. And I, for whatever reasons, my involvement with Lights and Sounds, I know that I was leaving the studio to go to my record label office. And I had, you know, a staff and interns and a bunch of artists that I was actually, you know, those were the days we were actually funding the recordings. And maybe the certain members in the band problem with how involved I was with that record company, and that's how I was that's what I was told. I was basically told to focus on my record company and leave Yellow Card to them.
Yeah.
And that's about it. I don't want to, you know, talk too much about it. And there was a legal back and forth that ensued for almost 6 months, and then I was actually signed out of the band. I didn't want to be out of the band. Heck no.
Yeah.
And yeah, so, and I think there's a couple of us that want to really tell a story one day, and I don't want to speak for LP, but he hasn't had the chance to be on this podcast, and he's busy, you know, living life but he too, I think it says that he left the band, and that's not the case whatsoever.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's the thing, man. This is, I'm not like a journalist. I'm not looking for dirt. I was just always kind of wondered what happened, and thank you very much for telling the story.
Yeah, no problem.
So let's get back to cooler stuff. So, you know, once you left the band, you joined Amber Pacific, which is a great band. I saw them on Warped Tour so many times back in the day when I was touring on that tour. How did that all come about? Did you know those guys prior?
You know, that was cool. That was in my first place, my new place. I was in Long Beach, California. I had a recording studio and then my record company in the house. First record company house office. And I remember an email came in from their manager just asking if I would be interested, because they had lost their guitar player, if I was interested in touring with the band. And I said yes. And I got flown up to Seattle, and I love Seattle. And I was on a tour bus, shared a tour bus with the band All Time Low. It was their first tour ever. And it was all Hopeless Records. Yeah. So I was actually sharing a tour bus with All Time Low on their first tour ever. And you could see the kids already like going crazy for them when they would open every night. But I became good friends with Will and Matt and everybody, Amber. And it was just a great honor to be asked to get back on the road right after that happened with Yellow Card. It was super cool. And I think it got into the point where it was time for them to do a new record, and I just sort of bowed out. I wasn't ready to get into that process with a whole new group of guys just yet. You know what I mean? It was just a year and some change out of Yellow Card, and that was it. So I'm still friends with most of those guys today, whoever. Yeah, all of those guys, actually.
That's awesome.
The whole freaking band. Yeah.
So after your tour of duty in Amber Pacific, you joined Hey Mike, which is another great band. According to Wikipedia, you are still in Hey Mike. Is there anything going on with Hey Mike right now?
Yeah, well, Hey Mike was the flagship artist with Takeover Records. They, with Craig's brother and, Near Miss, Hey Mike was a couple of guys, and I actually helped put the group together. If you think about it, even though Hey Mike was kind of Steven Newfield's project since he was a kid, he went, at one point, played all the instruments and recorded the original Hey Mike EP on his own. Just through the touring of Yellow Card and just the family of bands, Hey Mike arrived, and we did a few albums with Mike Green on Takeover Records. And so when I was out of Yellow Card, they were like my best friends. It was just a no-brainer for me to play guitar, second guitar with them, because they would survive as a one-guitar band.
Yeah.
And then, two guitars would just sweeten it. But I just was I've been in and out of the band, and the band is sort of a project of many of Steven Newfield. Steven Newfield played bass in this legend. He's the brainchild of Hey Mike, and he has another band called Brookhurst. And so when Hey Mike, it's time to do Hey Mike again, I hope I am going to be the guitarist, and do stuff with them. I think that's one of the next things on his list, other than this legend. So yeah, it's all kind of in the works. There's a lot of stuff in the works. I think the industry's every year is getting more and more ripe for bands to come back together or release stuff, because streams are becoming more and more valuable. So
yeah, and I love the
we should all be going.
The segues in this conversation have been great, because I was going to ask you about this legend, which I checked you guys out recently. I think the last stuff you guys recorded and put out was in 2014, but I gotta say, man, it's great stuff. I love that it's kind of got that pop punk feel, but then it also has some like heavier parts to it. I really enjoy it. Can you tell me about what's going on with this legend, or how that all came about?
Yeah, this legend I'm super proud of, because that is LP when we keep connecting different points on this conversation. LP when LP was out of Yellow Card, when he was actually asked to leave the band in early 2014, he called me, and I haven't heard from him in about 5 years. And we've always been close throughout all the comings and goings of the band stuff. And he had reached out to me the day he was out of Yellow Card and said, "What's up?" And I was up in Big Bear. He was in West Hollywood. It's probably about a 2-hour drive. And I think the next, he wanted to come up, I think, that night. And I was like, oh, don't drive up here. It's pretty dangerous. And I think the next night we met up. And before This Legend was a band name or anything, we had this wonderful, these wonderful people by the name of Jen Abeda and Aaron Abeda. Aaron Abeda is well known as El Jefe from No Effects.
Totally. El Jefe is awesome, man. His wife's great as well.
Yeah. Yep. And he and they had recently seen LP play a Yellow Card show and were on the phone with LP and knew that him and I had reconnected. And they just, in a sense, like really wanted to start something and introduced us to Chris Castillo, who is the singer-songwriter of This Legend. And we clicked, and we immediately got Steven from Hey Mike to play bass and do backup and started This Legend and got a record deal. We had a record deal before we had a band name.
Awesome.
It was super cool. And we just really got together super quick. And I think we were in the studio by, I think we were a band by May, and we were in the studio by July. And we pumped out a record funded by Cybertrax, which was El Jefe and his wife's label. You know, they're still going and they're still signing bands. And if it was up to us, we'd have another record out for them or on Takeover Records. But we just haven't quite been able for all of us to take our personal lives and get back together to where we were, to where we're, you know, doing a new record. It's been about 4 years, I think, since we've been a band. We're coming on our fourth year. And we've talked about it and talked about it.
Did you do any touring?
We did it. Yeah, we did. Yeah, This Legend for about a year and a half. We did a lot of touring. We didn't stop. And we did a full, the Lag Wagon Hang tour. We did that whole Canada, North American run, you know, the States and Canada.
Yeah.
And that was absolutely awesome. We did a couple on our own and small packages with other bands. I think we, you know, probably did about 3 or 4 tours, and we had an agent. We were with Ben from APA, and I was very proud of us to get all of that together. You know, it was so awesome for LP and I to come together and just have a focus. And at that, you know, a lot of people know it's hard, you know, when you're in your mid-30s or whatnot, to get bands together, and especially with people have lives and jobs, you know what I mean? To start something brand new name, brand new songs, brand new style. And we did that. And I hope, you know, whether it's this year or next year, I don't even care. I hope just one point we're able to come back and revisit and do some more of This Legend songs. I know Chris has sent me new songs, the singer, and I know LP wants to do it, and he's back in California. And, but, you know, our bass player, Steven, just had a kid, you know.
Yeah.
Da-da-da. People are getting married. People are having babies. People are doing career changes and moving. And once everyone gets settled, it'll come around again. And I think we did enough damage. We'll had enough head. Enough of a head start where people know This Legend tour, it'll be worth it. And I think it's worth it anyways just to put out good music, right?
Yeah, definitely, man. So Takeover Records, you've mentioned it quite a bit. I want to dig into that a little bit. You said you first started that, you know, putting out the early Yellow Card stuff, and it survived and gotten to be this big actual, you know, real record label. Is there a lot going on with Takeover right now, and does that take up a lot of your time?
I'm glad you ask. For me, I have, to be perfectly honest, I have, Takeover Records is my thing. It was so awesome being in Yellow Card and be able to sign bands and take all those Yellow Card fans and Warped Tour fans and be able to divert them to new bands and have that little family of independent artists. And then after the days of CDs and actually paying for people's recordings, I think from about 2007 to 2011, there was like this dead zone where nobody, you know, nobody was doing the CD thing. No one was really putting a lot of money into artists. And there wasn't any streaming in that sort of time. And we, to this day, we now are, we focus on digital distribution. We are lucky enough because we had old Yellow Card releases at the time in a little roster. And we did what we did when I was in Yellow Card. We signed with a company called The Orchard. It wasn't The Orchard at the time. We were with a different company. We got acquired by The Orchard. The Orchard is owned by Sony, and they're one of the biggest digital distributors out there. And so to this day, I'm still bringing art. Like, I think I did 4 releases last year, just 4 releases. But it's all it is you're taking bands that already have the recordings, and you're getting them, you know, on Spotify and Pandora for, you know, a little more transparent rate, and they are actually knowing what they're getting. on a monthly basis, as opposed to being on CD Baby or TuneCore. I'm able to still offer digital distribution deals to artists. So that's what Takeover Records is now, is we're a digital record label. So,
I feel like things are going that way anyway, though, because I mean, I don't remember. I buy vinyl a lot, but I don't remember the last time I bought a CD, and I just don't know how these record labels are making it anymore. If you go digital, I mean, I just feel like that's the wave of the future. I think that's great that you guys are doing that.
Right. Well, the whole thing is transparency. It's like nobody really knows what they're getting from Spotify and all these streaming services that have been around now almost for 10 years. And because of our deal and what we are grandfathered in with The Orchard, we're able to kind of say, hey, we're getting 0.00 whatever per stream from Spotify. And this is what TuneCore and CD Baby are actually paying out over the last few years. And we're able to offer the artists a little bit more, maybe even double than what some of these companies are offering. And then we're also transparent on the back end and the numbers. And we're actually issuing checks every month. Where people are telling this thing. Now, I've been, for the last 2 or 3 years, I've been really researching this. And you're going to see, I'm actually leaving good old Big Bear Lake, which is the mountains in Southern California, kind of small town stuff. I've been in the medical marijuana industry for 8 years now. And it's time for me to get back into the big cities and going to shows and getting more. I want to sign 100 artists, maybe 100. If it has to be pop punk or rock artists, I will. You know, any artist that will follow the lead and join the Orchard with us. And start, you know, showing people they can actually make money off of streaming, and it's not such a far-fetched idea because a lot of people are jaded.
Yeah.
And now there's all things that have been passed, like Music Modernization Act, that have been passed, and things are going to change, you know. But streaming in the next 10 years, the arrow's pointed up. And if we can get a solid group of artists that are actually showing the world that they're making some money, unlike they are on CD Baby or TuneCore, And that's what I want to do. And that's sort of where, yeah. So you're going to hopefully see a lot of Takeover Records in the future.
That's awesome.
We call it. That's about it.
Do you have anything else coming up in the future, musically or otherwise? Like what does take up a lot of your time right now, as far as like, what do you do for fun? What do you do for work? You know?
Yeah. Like I was saying, medical marijuana, I've been doing a medical marijuana delivery service up in the mountains for years now. And that's Southern California living for you. I was lucky to do this legend a few years ago with LP, and I hope that we're, you know, if there's anything musically, I'd be in a band, that would be the next thing to reappear. He's got a new band called The Secret Social Club, so definitely check that out. But hopefully he's got some time to do a new This Legend recording that should be down the pipeline. And then other than that, yeah, go for record. Just providing artists or whatnot with a real, you know, a transparent digital distribution deal where they're actually seeing money every month.
That's awesome. And, man.
Yep.
So, hey, I just want to say, you know, I have one more question for you and then I'm going to let you go. I know you're a busy guy. This show is called That One Time on Tour. So I know we've talked a little bit about touring, and some people prepare a story, but I just kind of like to catch people off guard. Is there a time on tour that, you know, just sticks out to you, a funny thing, a scary thing, just something insane that happened to you on tour? Could you tell my listeners?
I've got a bunch of stories. I could do the really cool, like, who we've smoked pot with stories.
Okay, that's good.
And, yeah. Or, like, you know, I mean, we smoke LP and I at certain like yellow card performances. And we definitely represent the stoner, you know, stoner genre.
Yeah.
And we've been lucky enough to smoke blunts and play Madden with like some Nate Dogg, Vanilla Ice, like, you know, multiple times on the top of Capitol Records, yeah. Stuff like that.
That's cool.
And there's been multiple stories. And then, you know, there's this classic story of it's kind of gross. I think it's online. It's like someone made a cartoon out of it. But we were touring in Canada, and like the cold. It was February in Canada, so you can imagine how cold it was. And well, I keep it kind of quick, but I just I remember like the bus. We thought something was wrong with the bus, or someone had gone, I don't know if I can tell this right, took a number two on the bus. You know, you're not supposed to take a number two on the bus.
Well, you got to do, you got to do what I used to do, man. You put like the bag from the truck stop in the toilet and then you go number two and you just toss it out the window.
Yeah, you're supposed to toss it out, and because you don't want to stink up the tank.
Yeah,
and,
yeah, yeah. But you never go number two on the bus, though. You never do that.
Right, because it lingers. It lingers. And we'll never forget, it was whatever city, it was Winnipeg or something. We were continually smelled the smell, and we didn't know what it was. And days went by, and it was worse and worse. And we didn't know, we had the toilet, the tank flushed out, and all this stuff. And da-da-da-da-da, and we were trying to retrace our stuff on what had happened. And I think, I know there's a better version. Look up online, it's like yellow card, poop, tour story, you know, bus story, Canada winner, hashtag whatever. But I guess some chick really had to go on the bus and couldn't hold it and ended up going number two in a trash can in the bus. And it sat there.
Yeah.
For weeks. Yeah. And our bus driver finally found it or whatnot. And it was like, I don't know, the story's way better. told it that, if I was prepped for this, but I should have been on this podcast that one time on tour.
Hey dude, that's good enough, man. That is that one time on tour. I will tell you, it reminds me, this doesn't have anything to do with tour, but my dad always used to tell me this story when he was in college that, one of his buddies had a roommate that he didn't like. So he actually took a shit in a shoebox and put it under the guy's bed. And he ended up never even found it, but he had to actually move to a different dorm because they didn't know what the smell was.
Yeah. Same thing. It was like the big mystery. And then it was like, oh my God. And just the funny part was that this poor chick actually took a fucking, maybe she did the bag in the toilet thing and just threw it in her trash.
Yeah.
I mean, hoping that we would throw out our trash sooner or later, but no one really used that trash can.
That's so hilarious, man.
It was a bunch of guys, on tour. So,
yeah, definitely.
Anyways, good times.
Good times.
But I appreciate it. Sorry, I've been so busy in life. I wasn't more prepared for this awesome podcast, but I appreciate what you do, man, and keep it up.
Well, I'll tell you what, man, when this legend gets back and you're doing stuff or you just want to talk about some new releases on Takeover, I'll have you back for a part two and you can have some prepared stuff.
Let's do it. Yep. And awesome. You got to get LP on here one time.
Oh, dude. Yeah. Just, I think I used to be friends with him on Facebook, but I'm not anymore. Maybe you'll have to give me the hookup on that.
Yeah, I'll hook you guys up for sure. He loves talking. He's got some really good on tour stories.
Well, hey, man, I just want to say thank you so much for coming on the show today. How can people find you? What are your socials so people can find you on the internet?
I'm Facebook / Yellow Card Ben and then Takeover Ben on Instagram.
Awesome, man. Well, I will definitely put that in the show notes too so people can find you. And I just want to say this was a great conversation and I hope nothing but the best for you and good luck in the future. And I'll be in touch, man. Thank you so much.
Bye. See you around, sir. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, talk to you soon, man. Bye.
All right. Later, Chris. Bye.
So there it was, my conversation with Mr. Benjamin Harper, founding member of Yellow Card, this legend, Hey Mike, all kinds of stuff. Takeover Records, his record label, is really cool. Make sure to check them out and support Ben in all of his many endeavors. Thank you guys so much. I had a blast with this week's episode. I have a blast with every episode. Next week is no different. I got to sit down with Mr. Connor Lovat-Frazier. It's French. From the band Boys Night Out. Boys Night Out is literally one of my favorite bands. Their album Trainwreck kind of changed my life. And I know I say that a lot. You probably think, man, every band in the world changes Chris's life. But no, Boys Night Out, it was something special. And if you don't know who Boys Night Out is, you need to check them out before next week. But Connor is such a great guy. We got to geek out and talk about all kinds of stuff. So come back next week for my conversation with Connor from Boys Night Out. He's in a great new band called Pale Drone, so check them out as well. But I'm going to get out of here. I appreciate the support, guys. Check us out on Patreon, patreon.com/TOTOT podcast. Check out all the social media that we provide you at TOTOT podcast. And man, if you want to be a sponsor, hit me up. You got any questions for the Ask Chris episode, hit me up. TOTOT podcast @gmail.com.
You can listen and subscribe at TOTOTpodcast.com or at JabberjawMedia.com. Shout out to my dudes over at Jabberjaw. But I will see you guys next week. I'm going to play a couple songs. I'm going to play Yellow Card, Way Away, and This Legend, Lyrics with My Pen. Catch you guys later. Chris out.
And Hey, this is Aaron from No Simple Road. I'm inviting you to come hang out with Apple, Mel, and I as we talk with the musicians, artists, chefs, authors, and beyond from the world that turns us on. We're reaching into the improvisational music scene, the psychedelic culture, the festival world, and getting to know what makes the people tick that create those scenes. Come join us on the long, strange trip over at No Simple Road.